Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. In the summer of 1920, Ripon, Wisconsin's Carrie Chapman Catt and several other suffragists marched to Tennessee. They were on a quest to get 36 states to ratify the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that would give women the right to vote. Over a century later, the Grammy Award-winning folk singer Aoife O'Donovan pays tribute to Carrie Chapman Catt with her album, All My Friends. Aoife, who is also known for her work with Crooked Still and I'm With Her, was inspired by this slice of history. On All My Friends, she combines choir, brass quartet, chamber orchestra, and Chapman Catt's own writings to create a harmonious musical history. Beta's resident musicologist, Steve Gotcher, sat down with Aoife to learn more about her latest album.
All My Friends is an album inspired by the women's suffrage movement and specifically the passage of the 19th Amendment and the women who sort of were involved in the sort of final push, specifically a woman named Carrie Chapman Catt. And that's sort of interspersed with my own kind of reimaginings of her life and her experiences at sort of as well as my own.
When did you decide that's what I want to do?
I didn't really decide it, to be honest. I was asked to write a piece honoring this centenary of the 19th Amendment by the Orlando Philharmonic Orchestra, a big orchestral piece. And I was asked to do that in 2019, and I agreed. I don't really know why I agreed to do that, because I had never done anything like that before. But it seemed like a cool project to undertake. So I sat down and you know, after trying to get out of it once COVID hit, because it just felt like too much, couldn't get out of it. Okay, I have to do this. Sat down, started to write the initial five songs, which were first turned into like a big orchestra piece with full orchestra, and sat on it for a while. My record Age of Apathy came out. I was touring behind that. I did a whole Springsteen project, and all the while sort of worked on finishing the music to accompany the initial five songs. And that was thank you to a grant that I got from the Fresh Grass Festival, another commission to sort of finish the record. And here it is.
Yeah, that's amazing. Your album opens with the title track, All My Friends, and the song calls for change and an appeal to join together as friends. Why start the record with this particular message?
It's funny because, you know, initially that wasn't going to be the opening track, even though it was the opening track of the initial, like, song cycle, the orchestral part. That song is almost the thesis statement of the record. It's, you know, all my friends, we meet again someday. She's singing, I'm imagining that as not just Carrie Chapman Catt, the sort of suffragist who I based a lot of this music around, but also as just any woman who's a leader, any woman who's sort of gathering her community around her in search of something bigger than all of them. And I think having the children's chorus, which they come in very early on that song, it starts off with just me a cappella and then goes, I'm joined by trumpet and trombone from the Westerlies, and in this beautiful harmony, and the girls come in just humming softly. And it's really a powerful moment where you sort of say, okay, you sit back. Nothing much is happening. In some ways, I was like, is this too boring of a song to start with? But its simplicity, I think, really gets the message across that sometimes you just have to stop and listen and lean into the silence and lean into the mood to get something done.
I always knew, so did you, that we were going to war. Now years have passed, I'm trying to remember who it's for.
Yeah, and it set off in my mind when I first heard it that it was some sort of reference to the Civil War. And then I realized, no, it's actually about women gathering in Tennessee for the vote to ratify the 19th Amendment. It set the stage for the rest of the album in such a compelling way.
Thank you so much.
In the song America Comes First, you quote Carrie Chapman Catt when she wrote, "What is the democracy for which the world is battling?" Which sounds a lot like something that could be written today, not 100 years ago. Did the fact that Carrie's words are still timely inspire you to make this record?
Absolutely. I think, well, definitely the fact that a lot of her text directly is in this record, that's because, you know, when I learned about her, which was through a book by Elaine Weiss called The Woman's Hour, I was reading these letters and these speeches that Carrie Chapman Catt gave, and I was sort of like, how is this 100 years old? All of this, these thoughts, these very specific images. And that song, America Come, there's another section in that song where in a speech that she gave, she was talking about politicians. She's talking to politicians, and she's saying,
"Some of you are old and know. Are you willing to those who take your place? Might play with you not keeping pace. Is there any game for you? Oh, game for the nation to delay. Don't drive us away."
You know, the idea that there are these older politicians who aren't stepping aside to make room for new politicians to sort of do the work and advance the cause. I think that line specifically, I was just like, holy cow, this could be, anybody could be saying this right now.
You use quotes from Carrie Chapman Catt in your songs, especially the second song in the record's called Crisis, which would seem like a tense piece of music based on the title, but it comes across as very uplifting. Tell me about that song.
I think the song has two sections where it basically comes from a speech that she gave called Crisis that I sort of tried to rework as kind of a folksy kind of gather around the campfire. I imagine, you know, obviously this wasn't what she did, but in my mind, it's like, you know, she's got her guitar and she's singing like, gather around, I want to talk about this thing. I want to talk about this crisis that we're going through. And the song kind of starts with a really kind of like a bluegrassy kind of feel. And there's mandolin, Sierra Hall's playing mandolin on it and has this beautiful orchestration and the string and the woodwinds. But then at a certain point, it kind of, the mood shifts and it changes meter. It goes into march in three, and the children's chorus comes in and we're singing in unison, almost a chant of sort of what the real crux of the message is, which is,
"Oh, America, America, with that North Star, the day will come down, the time has come to shine a light in every city and village and town, the woman's hour is struck, the woman's hour is now."
And then it kind of goes back into the bluegrassy thing and then finishes in that sort of intense 3-4.
Yeah, it's an amazing record, and a song in particular, but the record in general is great because you're putting together a piece of music that could have been like a history lesson set to music. But it came off as very unpretentious, very entertaining, not strident. Were those things you were working to not do, or did it just happen that way?
I think probably because I'm not a historian. I don't love music that's overly intellectual. I especially don't love lyrics that leave the listener confused. I'm a folk singer, you know, and when you use that term, or when I use that term, what it means to me is I make music for the people. Even in my weirdest, most sort of music school brain, where I have songs in different time signatures or with weird chord progressions, I still want them to sound accessible, and I want people to be able to say, "Oh, weird, like I wasn't expecting you to go to that chord, or I wasn't expecting to not be able to tap along in the way I normally want to tap along. I still want it to sound like folk music," and in the lyrics and in the music itself. And I think that, so I don't think I was trying to not be any of those things. I think it's just sort of naturally how I am, if that makes sense.
Sure. One of the things about listening to this record is that there are layers and layers and layers of things. Yes, it's a historical perspective about something that happened 100 years ago. But as you listen to it, you can find parallels to today's world as you go through it. Was that something you set out to do to begin with?
I think so. I mean, that maybe not at the very beginning. I kind of had no idea what I was going to do before I started it. But as I started it, and especially as I finished it, that's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to give it more of a scope and more of a color and not just have it be about one specific thing, but just sort of say, I'm a woman, I have a daughter. Just thinking about sort of how this circle of the women who came before us and what they were working towards and what they were fighting for. And, you know, this sort of first wave feminism, second wave feminism, what's happening now that we're really, you know, almost done with the first quarter of the 21st century. It's just sort of, there are so many parallels to draw.
You and your husband, Eric Jacobson, produced this record, and it really sounds great. It reminds me a lot, in a way, of the Decemberists album, The Crane Wife, which I know was produced by Tucker Martinez, somebody you've worked with. What was your process for putting this record together?
Well, I also, the third co-producer was Darren Schneider, who was the mixing engineer and master and recording engineer at Full Sail University, where we live in Central Florida. The process for kind of getting all this together, it really was in spurts. You know, I tracked the first bunch of songs live in a room with bass and drums and guitar, ended up sort of working on the vocals over time after that, and then adding strings came first, then woodwinds came second, then brass, then children's chorus, and then kind of, it was just sort of piece by piece, because it's a lot, you can't really, started during COVID, but even still, it's pretty hard to get an orchestra in a room to do everything at once, just so many people, and you need a huge space, and it's expensive, so we did it in sections.
Chris Thiele once said of you, she's not selling us anything, she's telling us secrets, kind of a secret about the magic in the world that she's finding. Do you think you accomplished that with this record?
That's really a sweet quote. I hope so. I mean, I think that my thing, or I think what one of the things I'm always trying to do is be myself. And I think that with this record, I, even though it's much more character driven and sort of specifically a historical character than anything I've done in the past, it's still me, and it is still me talking to you. And if you're listening to it on headphones, it is me in your ears. Sort of, yeah, whispering or just sort of trying to bring you into this world and trying to paint the picture that there's room for you to come and sit next to me and listen.
Right. And one of the songs I thought that kind of illustrated this sense of magic is The Right Time, which starts out with some kind of haunting vocal sounds, and then the lyrics come in.
Ain't it easy to see me? Petticoats shine like Mary's. Tried to lose a lamb on the way. Don't give him anything to laugh about.
I love that song. I really love how that song turned out, because it's one of the last ones that I wrote for the record, and I was really trying to sort of just kind of get into this kind of trancey vibe of her waking up in the morning and as a young woman going to her one room schoolhouse and the sort of the line of like being in petticoats, and it's just this totally different time where women weren't necessarily expected to rise through the ranks and education was maybe not as expected of women. And she really did it. She really kind of got there. She gained strength. She really blossomed into such an incredibly intelligent and talented and sort of fierce leader of an entire movement. And I just, that's really inspiring to me.
The album ends with Dylan's The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. What made you choose that particular song to end the record?
My friend Gabriel Kahane arranged this for me in 2016 when I was doing a concert at the lawn of the Capitol with the National Symphony, which was very cool and very special. It was his idea. He thought, let's do this kind of intense Dylan song about this murder of a black woman in a hotel bar in Maryland in the 60s. And his arrangement is just arresting and really has just so much personality. I wanted to include it on the album as sort of a coda to the first eight songs, which sort of ends with a song I wrote called Over the Finish Line. And then there's kind of a little bit of a pause. And you then hear the Battle Hymn of the Republic start and I'm singing along. And then it breaks away to The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, which is Bob Dylan's just sort of his version of the story, his folk song version of this kind of gruesome and horrible thing that happened, where a very privileged 26-year-old white guy kind of got 6 months for this totally ridiculous and stupid and tragic death.
William Zanzinger, who had 24 years, he owns a tobacco farm on 600 acres with rich, wealthy parents who provide and protect him in high office relations in the politics of Maryland, reacting to his deed with a shrug of his shoulders and swear words and sneering. His tongue, it was snarling.
You said something in the New York Times in 2022 that really amazed me, because it's exactly the way I think about music, and I wanted to read the quote. "Music is everything to me. It's literally the most important thing. When I think about where I want my life to go, where I want to be when I'm older, what's going to happen after we die, music is the thing that will get us through to the end, and music is what will be there after we're gone." How does that belief inform what you're going to do going forward?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I think that my days are filled with music. My life is filled with music. Everybody in my family plays music. You know, like, when you make music a part of your everyday life, I'm sitting here playing Joni Mitchell songs as my daughter's in her playroom, and she's singing Big Yellow Taxi while she plays with Magnetiles in the other room. And my husband's practicing a cello quartet that he's playing tonight in New York and studying, you know, his Beethoven scores for his concert he's conducting next weekend. It's all just, it's everywhere in my life and in my family's life. My philosophy, I guess, it just is how we live, and is how my extended family lives. It's just kind of the way it is. And I love that. I feel so lucky that I was brought up that way and that I'm able to bring up my own child that way. It's great. I'm so lucky.
Yeah, I really appreciate that you said that, and that was quoted in the New York Times. Aoife O'Donovan, thank you so much for your time today. And thanks for All My Friends. It is a brilliantly moving record.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Stephen.
Once in a lifetime, the power is ours, but we'd rather steer the phone.
Aoife O'Donovan spoke to Steve Gotcher about her latest album, All My Friends. Find out more about Aoife and her music at wpr.org/beta.
If I could change your mind.
Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Paul W. Downs and Lucia Aniello, Jamal Mayfield, and Aoife O'Donovan.
They have a lot of zany stuff on this program, don't you think?
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
He was only meeting a demand that was already there.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
You are an executive producer now.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Do you know how many sellers there are on Etsy making a profit off my name and likeness?